talking about today is, are you really happy?
Yes.
You know, I appreciate the serendipity of the universe, and as you know, most of you know, I do the bookstore here. And the other day I was clearing it out, and I had talked about this. I don't know why this particular subject came up to me, but I picked up this little book. You can't, it doesn't have a title on it, you can't read anything. And I opened it up, and the title is Happiness. And it was written by the professor of English at Yale in 1927, and they did 14 different reprints until August of 1929, which kind of interested me because that was right before the crash of the Depression. After that, it wasn't there. So I kind of wondered about that. Interestingly, he first talked about politicians and their ethics or lack of, and he had a little bit different, a little different twist than I had heard before. And his senior year of college, the president of the college said, the happiest person is the person who thinks the most interesting thoughts. He put that definition of happiness where it belongs, within and not without. So I thought that was pretty impressive. Interestingly, like I said, he talked about politician, and he also talked about how the pursuit of happiness is something that our country's based on. However, sometimes we look at happiness as successful, safe, lucky, stuff, which is external.
Yep.
Have you seen this commercial? I'm sure you have. I find drug commercials particularly irritating. And why? Because they're using a mask to cover up. I think the thing that was hard for me with this one is later on they have another one for this add-on treatment. This is not the original treatment, this is an add-on.
Woman who was dealing with her parent who had Alzheimer's. Somebody said to me, you know, I wonder if the drug is really for the Alzheimer's or the patient or for the stress that that caregiver is having. And I think that's really true. Now, uncontrolled muscle movements, suicide, increased ability to control emotions, and death are the side effects. So exactly what are we treating? Depression's serious, and don't get me wrong, I mean, sometimes medication is necessary. However, are we hiding from what we really feel? Are we putting this up instead of what we really feel? There's a book that I ran into recently. It was written by Lori Gottlieb, and she was supposed to write a book about happiness. Well, instead, she wrote a book called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. And the book is about her looking at herself. Before she could write about happiness, she had to write about herself. So this book has her clients, has her, has a lot of really good things in it. And a couple of things that I thought were interesting is she had, from the Journal of Medical Ethics in 1992, they wrote that happiness should be classified as a psychiatric disorder. A major diagnosis, a major affective disorder, pleasant type. Happiness is statistically abnormal, a discrete cluster of symptoms associated with a range of cognitive abnormalities, probably reflecting the abnormal functioning of the central nervous system. One possible objection to this proposal remains that happiness is not negatively valued. Objections were dismissed as scientifically irrelevant. So happiness is an illness? I mean, we'll see. But there's also a formula that was worked out for happiness. Don't ask me to explain this, I can't. But I think the important... What's that?
Quantum mechanics.
Yep, that's fine. I'm not going to go there. That's not my thing. But however, they also have, recently I read on the internet, they're doing an international study of happiness. So evidently, people are interested. It's going over 70 countries, going to survey 130,000 people or more, and they expect to get lots of good information. But the online one online definition was valued positivity, pleasurable state of well-being and contentment, a feeling in the body. We're emotional beings, and emotion is energy, and we seek higher levels of energy, and it feels good. So, can we put too happy of a face on things? We've heard it takes more muscles to smile than to frown. And depending on who you talk to, it's different muscles. So, I look at this one and I go, conserving energy, is that really what it's about? And this one. Pretty hostile, don't you think? And then this one that I found is tragic. Are we covering our loneliness, our disconnectedness, our sadness? We have an epidemic of loneliness in this country that increased over the pandemic. I recently read that 30% of kids are put in the category of being depressed. A friend of mine looked at a smiling people in an Avatar brochure, and they said, nobody could be that happy. And if you're not familiar with Avatar, it's a personal development kind of program. Were they sincerely happy, or were they faking? Models, actors, politicians all smile. In fact, they're taught how to smile, all right? I learned it's important to look at the eyes, because even serial killers smile. There was used to be a sci-fi movie, it was in the 80s, and it was about these lizard creatures that came to Earth, and they came in, and they made themselves into human form. And what I noticed about them, actually I kind of look for this in people now, is they had this slow smile, but their eyes were dead. Mm-hmm. Or they had this incredibly intensive look. So it told you a lot about what was going on with them. I recently ran across an article called It's All Good and You're All Perfect. And this woman made a good point. She talked about, her name is Pamela Paul, and she said there's kind of a toxic positivity that she's seeing. And what she means by this is she responds to emails now with a knee-jerk, oh, it's perfect. Whereas before she'd say, sounds good, that's okay. Chatbots, I have a hard time with that word, likely communicate with endless effervescence, just like we've taught them to do. Artificial intelligence has even higher levels of enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Should she show any down expression, she can count on somebody going, oh no, you're good. But as she said, it's all good sometimes is a way to shut down conversation about something that's actually pretty bad. I'm okay and you're okay and all that sounded pretty bland. But she mentioned how there's a vague sort of dishonesty about our interactions. Her one teacher friend said that on college applications she saw there was this toxic positivity of blurting out saccharine phrases when you don't get the college you want. As she said, you can be oppressively upbeat. And it's hard not to see mindless optimism as an effort to balance the forces of nastiness and negativity with social media and the emotional expressions that have become as polarized as our politics. However, she said, humans seem to have collectively decided that we could use a little piece of pick-me-up along the way, that maybe all these expressions offset the online and offline grievances and discourse out there. In the grand scheme of things, she says, what merits complaint, emotional inflation is probably the least of our pressing problems. One could even say it's just fine. Or perhaps it's all good. As we head into what looks like a bumpy 2025, it may not be entirely wrong to call it perfect. So, I think that we need to look for the internal joyful parts. And joy, different than happiness. Joy is like an attitude of the heart and spirit. It's a way of life, not just an occasional emotion. You can feel that joy rise in your body. There's a tone scale. This is from Scientology, in which some people can't stand. And actually, most religions that I've studied and different kinds of philosophical kinds of things, somebody always takes it and makes it bad. But this is one thing I really liked because it looked at the energy level. So you can see the guy at the top's really happy. The guy at the bottom is dead. And if you have a person who's in grief, one of the things they mention is if you have a person who's in grief and you come to them like this, they can't relate to it. That people can only change a few. They might go up to sympathy or maybe fear or maybe even to covert hostility, which is up there. And you can see in those red ones, antagonism and anger, all those things are right where we are now. And we don't want to be pulled down into grief and apathy. And there's other kinds of death besides body death. There's mental, emotional death as well. So what we want to do is try to bring people up. So how do we do that? How do we change our attitude? Viktor Frankl A concentration camp survivor who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, which you've probably heard of over the years, talked about everything can be taken away from man except one thing, the last of the human freedoms, which is the way to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. We choose. And one thing he also said that you don't hear about as much is there's a stimulus and a response. And in that space in between is where we make our choice. And if we make that from a balanced and peaceful place, our choices are much better. He puts it as, in our response lies our growth and our freedom. We might feel joyful, at peace, happy within ourselves, but life is about relationships. So what is our responsibility to help these other people? First off, we have to get in touch with our authentic self. I think we need to be aware, too, of responses that sneak up on us, triggers that we may not be aware of. The body remembers and tells us if we listen. That'd be a fun thing to talk about in a further talk. But I noticed with my clients, I do a lot of myofascial work with people, and one thing I've noticed is recently people have said, oh, especially when it was gray, I'm on a carb load, all I want to do is eat carbs, which we attributed to the weather, but also the food is a soother, a comforter. And then I had a week, maybe 2 weeks, where everybody I had this pain right here, which is where your spleen is. And I went, this is weird. And then one day I woke up and I had pain there, which was like a flash and it was gone. I thought, huh. So I went and looked it up. And metaphysically, the spleen, which turns food to energy, metaphysically means anxiety, worry, poor concentration, a difficulty making decisions, overthinking. So there's a lot of free-floating anxiety around right now. And you may not even realize that you're picking it up from people. Or you may realize it because you're doing your regular things and then all of a sudden, can feel it. So, if we clean ourselves up, so to speak, how can we help these other people? Maybe somebody who's grieving or even in apathy. This might be well-intended, but it's not going to be real to them. People say things that are meant to be comforting. Oh, you can still have another child. At least you lived a long life. She's in a better place now. It's been a year. Maybe it's time to move on. When you're ready, you can always get another dog. Aww. That sounds like it's emotionally protecting the speaker from the uncomfortable feelings rather than dealing with the person who's having the problem. So we want to explore our own feelings before we do a knee-jerk response like that. Those palatable or those platitudes make things palatable for the person saying the words, but leave the person experiencing the adversity alone and often angry. So, some other things you might say is, how can I help? Now, sometimes people don't want help and they're angry. I saw a comic with Lucy and Linus the other day, and Lucy was saying, I'm really feeling crabby. You know, she's always feeling crabby. That's kind of her basic emotional tone. Anyway, he said, well, can I do this for you? Can I do this for you and this for you? Finally, at the end, she just let me be crabby. Because sometimes that's what we need. And sometimes anger is a way of actually moving up that tone. So the important thing is to say things like, do you want to talk about it? Call me if you want to, or if you just want to get away. I care about you. I can be here with you, or not, if you want to be left alone. Do you need a hug? But it's also important to follow up with people because they may not have the energy to reach out. There's a book called Harmony, another bookstore book. Gotta plug the bookstore here. Her name is Carolyn Parkhurst, and she was dealing with a daughter who had autism. And she says about happiness, happiness in the real world is mostly just a resilience and willingness to arch towards optimism, to believe that people are more good than bad, to believe that the waves carrying you are neither friendly nor malicious, and to know that you're likely to drown if you stop struggling against them. It was a bright, sunny day when my dad took us out to the farm to get eggs. And we were so excited. We didn't get out there very often. I was wearing my new slip-on tennies. They were bright red, had a little inset that was red and white, looked kind of nautical. I loved those shoes. My dad never bought stuff like that. My mom bought us nice, sturdy shoes that were ugly. And they were serviceable and indestructible. We even took our toes on the sidewalk and tried to wear them out, but it didn't work. So I was so excited. My dad had bought me these shoes. I went out there. He said, well, don't go too far. And he's got talking to the farmer. So we ran out in that field. We just, beautiful day like today, sunshine, flowers, long grass, the animals. We ran out there. When he called us, we ran back. And as I just was to the fence, stepped right in it. Does anybody in here not know what a cow pie is? Well, it was up to the ankle. So I was devastated. My new shoes. Dad actually was, well, you shouldn't have stepped in the cow pie. My mom tried to fix the shoes, which were a total loss. So I was really devastated for a while, and then I was just sad. But then there was something else I realized about this. My happiness was fleeting. The joy was worth it. Would I have not gone in that field had I known there was a cow pie out there? There's no way I wouldn't have gone out in that field. But there's one more lesson there. Cow pies have a purpose. They help the cow, definitely. They can be used as fertilizer. In some countries, they dry them and use them for fuel. But hidden or in plain sight, even if you sugarcoat it, it's still a cow pie. We're in challenging times right now. We're in challenging times. There are many cow pies. There are things to step in when we're not paying attention. There are some things we can't avoid, and some seem more like landmines. How can we navigate all this? How can we keep our core unstable and fly into life? First of all, we want to have faith in the highest and the best. God's in control, but we need to do our part. Make peace with what is. Some things we can't change. Discrimination, judgment. What is it we really see going on there? Can we get above the level of the problem? Can we let go of the blame game and shame game? We choose our attitude about it. We always have a choice. And sometimes, frankly, the choice is walking away. We strive to improve the situation, not fall into anger and criticism or even apathy. And also, we try to do the right thing, because the right thing is not just always doing the right thing. Sometimes it's just taking the next step forward, even if you don't know where it leads. Being happy, I look at as being more external. Not that it's not a good thing, but it comes from without. Joy, I look at as being internal, that feeling, that joy that just flows through your body. And then peace, I look at as being eternal. It's that space between the stimulus and the response where we make our choice. And if we're peaceful there, our choices are so much better. In the book that I wrote that Jill mentioned, I always thought of my mom, who would look at these flat gray Idaho skies, not one like today, but the nice flat ones we've been seeing most of winter, and she'd go, oh, I see a little bit of blue. And I go, Mom, it's just a lighter shade of gray. I was in my cynical mode then. But she'd always do that. And so I've gotten to the point where my granddaughter will even go, Grandma, I'd really be happy. Look at the sky. And she always looked for that little bit of blue. And actually, that's the name of the second book that I'm writing. But what it's about is her trying to find positive things. She always said, remember the good times. And that's great. But we also need to look at the things that are difficult. The other book that I've been working with, a woman named Bobby Wilcox, she's publishing it this summer. It's called The Power of Inner Sparkle. And I contributed a chapter to that. But in the chapter I say, until today becomes tomorrow, we cannot see the beauty in catastrophe. Oops, I don't want this guy. He could be catastrophe, all right. However, I believe that this video that I'm going to show is talking about catastrophe and disaster and showing when it calls forth creativity, caring, courage, and humanity.
Don't worry about a thing, 'cause every little thing is gonna be alright. I woke up this morning. my horizon. Three little birds were on my doorstep, singing sweet songs, melody blowing true. And they sent this message to you. They said, don't worry.
I always get emotional seeing that one. Courage, creativity, taking something that could be tragic and changing it into something that's more positive. At the end of this little happiness book, I didn't really read this until I'd done most of the rest of this talk. And I thought it interesting that at the very end of it, he talks about, can I go back here? He talks about this. He says, well, since the daily life of an American cow is exactly what the existence is held up to us as an ideal, physical comfort, no pain, no worries. With no pains and no worries, who would want to be a cow? Very few human beings would be willing to change into cows, which must mean only one thing. Life with all its sorrows, cares, perplexities, and heartbreaks is more interesting than bovine placidity. Love these words. Hence, more desirable. The more interesting it is, the happier it is, and the happiest person is the person who thinks the most interesting thoughts. And my addition is, watch out for the cow pies.
I'm quiet, I'm
and let it out. Let the tension flow out of your body. And notice your breathing. Let it be calm. Feel your body in the chair where it touches you, your feet on the floor. Feel the sensations on your skin. Think of how it feels when you're standing or sitting in the sunshine. Notice the smells and sounds. With long, slow breath, we calm. If you notice sadness, pain, or anger, give it permission to release and let go. See if you can remember something happy. How that felt in your body. And then something joyful. Where did you feel that in your body? Could you feel it from the center of your core up and through and out into the world? Let it flow. Let it take that anger and sadness or pain, anything that's weighing you down. Let it flow out. And peace. That space in which you make choices. Feel it in your body. Not like a nothingness, but a fullness. Flowing out from your head, down out through your fingers, washing away anything no longer useful for you. There is an endless supply. It's always accessible to you anytime you want it. You don't have to get permission. You can just be and be with it. And know that everything will be all right. Bring yourself back to this room, this time, this place, to the beauty of the day and the world around you, and know that all is well. May peace be with you. Namaste.
I'm at ease. We have a fun song for you. Maybe it's a blast from the past for some of you. It is for us. So here we go. Sing along if you want.
A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing.